Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. This week's guest is retired Lieutenant Colonel Gabor Boda, who spent 28 years in active and reserve duty as a member of the U.S. military. He'll share his thoughts on what's happening in Afghanistan and how it impacts America's standing in the eyes of the world, plus what a lifetime of service to his country has taught him. Next.
This is Common Denominator, straight-up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Hi, Gabor.
Welcome. Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And I want to thank you for your years of service. Really,
thank you. I appreciate that.
First of all, I want to give you the respect. I know we talked about this before the show. You want me to address you as Gabor instead of Lieutenant Colonel. So I will be doing that. So
great.
Out of respect for you. So
thank you.
So let's get your thoughts on kind of what's happening now in Afghanistan.
So basically, everybody knows, so I don't want to go into the history that everybody can read on, that after 9/11, President Bush decided to send troops into Afghanistan, and primarily the purpose was to make sure that something like 9/11 doesn't happen again. We've been there for quite a long time, 20 years. We've lost over 2,500 soldiers during that time period. And it seems like, you know, nation building, which was the objective along with deterring any kind of threats, was moving very, very slowly. You got to look at the history of Afghanistan. Although it's a country, theoretically, it's a country that's made up of many, many clans, different groups, families, etc. And, you know, I sort of compare them to the Soviet Union after the fall of communism, and that all of a sudden, this country has democracy, a country that really never had such a thing. So, you know, I think the expectations were far greater than reality. All of a sudden now we have a situation where, although the pullout was extended to August 31, the pullout occurred in a very disoriented way. You don't have to be a military strategist to know that in a situation like this, the last group that leaves the country would be the military.
Right.
Okay. So you get, you know, all these U.S. citizens who are stuck there. Those people would have come out a long time ago. Equipment would have either been coming out or had been destroyed. And then at the very end, the soldiers who are capable of defending themselves.
Right. Because I see now, that they made a mistake, it seems, right? That they left the civilians, to your point. And now I don't know how many thousands of soldiers they've sent back to evacuate. What a, it seems like a mistake in some sorts.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't understand how military leadership, okay, at that level can make, you know, this is like going to a mathematician and saying, what's 1 + 1? And he answers 3.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I don't want to get into the politics or my thoughts on the political aspects of this, but it makes no sense.
Do you think we should have stayed longer in general? Or, you know, in other words, based on, so we went into Afghanistan,
yes,
20 years ago, and we are where we are today. Do you think, as the chief, right, of the military, the president made the right decision to pull out, or should we have stayed?
Well, I'll give you two different answers. Answer number one is that The general public, I'm not sure to what degree the general public is aware that the U.S. has military forces in many, many, many countries. Right. And basically, they're there for either some type of logistical, military, or counter terrorist reasons. It's not unique. Now, having said that, you know, do we want to be the policemen of the world? Again, there's two answers. This is the greatest country that has ever existed in the world. And this is a country that stands for good. And we protect the innocent, you know, the people who need help, etc. So should we have stayed there? Maybe yes, maybe no. But certainly, if we're not going to stay there, we should have had a better plan on withdrawing from that area. Or it could be an admission that, you know, we just can't do what needs to be done there, and we're not serving any kind of purpose.
Right. I think about 2.6 trillion dollars over 20 years. I think about that, and I'm wondering, imagine how many issues we have, issues with poverty, many, many issues, homelessness here domestically, and plus obviously the 2,500 plus soldiers that we've lost.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, we should make sure, at least intuitively, make sure our foundation is solid, right, before we're going to foreign countries halfway around the world.
And that's the point. And there's a lot of political considerations involved. There's a lot of economic considerations involved. And the leaders to be, okay, decided to do it this way.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we can debate, you know, different aspects of the rationale for doing this. But at the end of the day, it's like in the military, you know, the commander gives an order, and unless you have an ethical or moral issue with that order, you follow the order, whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah. Do you think that it was actually possible that Afghanistan would become a democracy? Do you think that was actually even feasible? Because I know you were mentioning kind of like the Soviet Union after the fall of Soviet Union. And actually, my wife's parents live in Moscow. So I'm familiar with that world. It's not a perfect democracy, but I think it might be a little better than, you know, than
pre-communism.
Yeah,
it is better. But again, you know, Russia is a country, just to use that example, and again, it parallels Afghanistan. They've never had a democracy. You can't create a democracy in basically 30 years, one generation. I think you need, you know, several generations to ease into it.
Right.
You know, Lenin had a famous saying, don't force something if it doesn't go without that force. So, you know.
And now look what we're seeing. We're seeing in the news, Russia, China seems to be on the ground. What was it? I think it was over a trillion of rare earth minerals.
Right.
You know, natural resources. So, you know, after all of this, and now Russia and China, who we have issues with to begin with, now they're stepping in.
They are going to be the big winners in this, unfortunately. You have the Silk Road over there that China has been using throughout history, that $1 to $3 trillion worth of metals that are in the mountains in Afghanistan. You know, the Chinese are going to corner the market, and they're going to call the shots on, you know, disposing of those metals. And they're going to have a tremendous economic and political gain in this.
Sure. Do you think we've lost respect as far as on the world stage?
I think that, unfortunately, we've been losing respect ever since the Vietnam era. I think we've had, unfortunately, a lot of missteps along the way, and this certainly isn't helping that. So I think you know, if I were, you know, I used an analogy before that, if I were an outsider looking at the situation here, you know, I would see a sort of a trend that's heading downward and not upward.
You know, I tend to hope that, well, step one, do you see all civilians being able to get out of Afghanistan safely?
I think that those that the Taliban will allow will get out. Now, the rest of them, just because, you know, this and that and whatever, I would say no.
And I did see also the Federal Reserve. There was a backup reserve currency from the Afghani bank, the National Afghani Bank, that was about $10 billion. And the U.S. froze that money. So I guess everything is a little bit above our head, but they're trying to put the pressures.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. And, you know, we get the news and we try to figure out from the news, you know, what's the reality. And, you know, unfortunately, in the last few years, we've been getting sort of two different types of news information. And, you know, journalism isn't what it used to be.
Do you think, just from the soldier's perspective on the ground, how do you think the conditions are for the soldiers that have, I guess, gone back to evacuate the civilians?
Right. So the soldiers feel, for the most part, they, you know, it's again another letdown. First of all, a lot of soldiers were stationed in Afghanistan who were basically doing guard duty on you know, different assets that the government had. I don't think maybe the soldiers would have been the right answer. Maybe more of a police type of unit would have been the answer. Not all soldiers, and most soldiers are not, you know, familiar with the type of roles that they had to perform in Afghanistan. You know, as a soldier, you have this esprit de corps, and you want to walk away feeling that you've accomplished something. Right. And I'm not sure that many of those soldiers are going to have that feeling.
I want to go back to when you first made that choice and you served for 28 years. What was kind of going on in your mind when you decided to serve the country?
I decided a long time ago, I was about a young teenager, when I decided two things. Number one, I was going to have an engineering degree. And number two, I was going to be in the military. And as I got towards the end of my high school years, Vietnam erupted and it became a major issue. And I decided that not only do I want to be in the military, but it looked like I was going to wind up being drafted. And my thought was, if I'm going to go to Vietnam, I want to go with as much preparation as I can get. So I went through ROTC. I did some extra ranger work within ROTC. So I got as much out of the training as I could get in order to try to ensure that I will survive that conflict. I also, you know, I'm a refugee to America. My family escaped Hungary in 1956 during the Hungarian Revolution. And we were very grateful for this country. And we wanted to do for the country, you know, pay back for allowing us to get in here.
Very admirable.
Because not everybody who escaped Hungary got into America. Most did not. We were very fortunate.
What would you say are the kind of two or three accomplishments that you're the most proud of in your days of service?
Well, basically, I started out in the military in the Corps of Engineers, and I was originally a combat engineer. I was specializing in demolitions. One of the major things that I'm proud of is ultimately I wound up in military intelligence, and I wound up being the reserve defense attaché to Hungary, which was a very big thing for me because, you know, that was the land of my birth. I got to go back as an American officer representing the United States. I was there during the time period when Hungary was admitted into NATO, which was a very big event for the Hungarians. I was also there during another very interesting time period when Hong Kong was about to be handed over to the Chinese. And although the U.S. was not a direct player in that, all the attaché staff were told to be very much on guard when dealing with the Chinese attaché in Hungary during that time, because there were a lot of movements going on. So that was a very, very big deal. And also, I guess the other big thing was I was in the parliament in Hungary and, you know, for various occasions, and I was meeting the prime minister and various heads of the government there, which was very interesting because, again, coming as a Jew whose family got pretty much, you know, the generation previous to my father were all wiped out. Yeah. So here I am back there in that position. And, it felt good. All of my relatives back here in the States, you know, were very, very proud of that. They thought this was the end of the world, that, you know, Gabor's over there in the parliament, you know, rubbing shoulders with, you know, the Hungarian big wheels.
I could see how that's super fulfilling, emotionally fulfilling.
Yes.
Just wanted to get your perspective, because I was also in New York. We're coming upon 20 years since September 11.
Yes.
Where were you when September 11, 2001?
On that particular morning, I was based at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. And I was working in already foreign military sales at the time. And I had a group of people coming from Toby Hanna Army Depot, from Sacramento Army Depot, and from Tuolumne Army Depot in Utah, because we were working on a program called the English Language Labs. So everybody, we started our meeting, I believe it was at 8 o'clock in the morning. These people flew in for the most part to our meeting. So we're sitting in this conference room, VTC conference room, because we had other people involved. And all of a sudden, like, you know, it was 11 o'clock, whatever, I hear there was a lot of running and commotion going on. We're having our meeting, had no clue what was going on until somebody suddenly opens the door and told us. And once we got the word, we hooked into, you know, the live scene of New York City and the towers and everything. But yeah, it was a...
Yeah. What do you take? What's your key takeaway as a patriot and soldier, kind of when you saw that, and emotionally what emotions come up for you when you think about that?
You know, it was a horrible thing. We have to remember that basically this is the first time in the history of this country that there was an attack on the country inside. You know, this was a shocker because, unlike most other nations, you know, America was never really invaded ever. So the first thing was a shock to everybody that something like this could happen in America. And we all wondered, how could something like this happen, obviously? How could it happen with all the technology we have, with all the security we have? I could have, you know, intelligence. It was a very, very big shock. It was extremely upsetting. I don't think that since I've been in America, since 1956, I ever saw such a coming together of the nation as far as the people go. I mean, there were U.S. flags all over. It was an extremely tragic event. But there was a coming together like I've never seen in this country.
Yeah, I think that's the. It's unfortunate, but that's the silver lining
Yes.
Humanity, right? I think about humanity. And I want to just say, God bless you. And I want to thank you so much for joining the show. Really.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.